You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, listeners, we welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. So if you'd like to talk with Susan, if you've got some questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise, give us a call and Susan will lend a hand. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, the publisher of that book, Coach's Choice. You'll find her on the web at www.eatandmove.com. That's EATNMOVE.com. Questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise? They are invited this afternoon. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Beautiful Monday afternoon.
It is. It's perfect outside.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got a listener waiting to talk with us on our toll-free line.
Okay.
In Indiana. Line 4. Hi. Line 4. Hold. I'm getting a hi sign here from Jason Croft. He says, hold on just a second. Okay. Now we're ready. Listener in Indiana. Go ahead.
Okay.
Hi.
All right. I am on a diabetic diet, and I take in approximately 195 grams of carbs. And I've been on the same food regimen for quite a while, and I guess I'm burned out. What I'd like to do is move to different foods, but keep the ratios between the carbs, the fat, and the protein, everything proper. I've not been able to find anything in particular. There's those 2,000 to 2,500 calorie diets that are on the nutrition sheets. But mine's not that way. I was wondering if there's some kind of ratio I can work out. If I have 195 carbs, I should have, you know, X amount of fat and X amount of protein and something like that. Is it that straightforward or is it more complicated?
Well, it certainly will depend on the total calories you're taking in. You know, if you've got about 195 grams of carbohydrate in your day, that's roughly about 800 calories. So that there's about 4 calories per gram of carbohydrate, yeah. So that'd be about 800 calories. So some of that's going to depend on how many calories you take in. It may be, do you have any idea about how many calories you take in or if you've been on a plan?
It started out a little higher than, of course, started to put weight on because of the diabetic medicine itself, so I got it knocked down. I think I'm going to put a grab at between 15 and 1750.
Okay.
But I thought, you know, what I can do is just go measure. You know, I measure everything I eat anyway.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm.
So I guess I could check it out on some kind of chart, see what actually how many calories I take in from the diet that the dietitian gave me.
Right. That'd probably be about in there because I would think that, you know, generally your carbohydrate needs are at least around 50% of what you take in. So, of course, that'd put you at around 1,600 calories or right in that ballpark that you're talking about.
Okay.
And I think then when we look at that, you know, let's say if you're 50% carbohydrate you're taking in, assuming you're not drinking significant amounts of alcohol.
No.
With that, then I would say you probably want to be around, you know, 20% of your calories from protein.
Okay.
And about 30% of your calories from fat, you know, focusing on more of the monounsaturated fat. And if you look at that, then, you know, gram-wise, let's say if you're trying to look at the labels and figure out what that ends up being, then that's going to be roughly around, let's say, 80 grams of protein.
Okay.
If you look at that's about 20% and, you know, maybe somewhere around 50 to 60 grams of fat.
Okay.
So if you look at foods and are trying to say, yeah, I'm not just on servings, but if I'm basing it on grams and I want to keep my carbs about the same, you're shooting for probably, you know, that's probably the plan that it was about 80 grams of protein and 50 to 60 grams of fat. And that'll help you when you're looking at food products. So let's say if you're trying to make some shifts and make some changes, you know, how's that plan worked for you in terms of keeping your blood sugars?
My blood sugars, you know, I'm usually, well, lately it's been running by like 120, 122. For a while I had it about 110 and 111.
Yeah, that's
but
great.
But I stopped. I was walking a little over a mile a day, and I'm sorry. Every once in a while, I pull off that regimen, and that's what I'm doing basically now. Just doing. But I end up with some other problem, and I'm only supposed to do like housework, regular housework, no other kind of. I don't mow the lawn anymore and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's due to a neurological thing in the back and stuff. But I just wanted to get a ballpark figure on that. And would you repeat the percentage for fat one more time?
Yeah, that, I mean, probably with what you're taking in, you know, our general recommendation for fats anywhere between around 20 to 30% fat. Okay. And so even at 30%, that would be, you know, around 50 to 60 grams anyway.
Okay.
And your protein's probably, you know, what's left is protein, and that's probably about 80 grams of protein.
Okay. That's very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Aurora on line one. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. In an attempt to lose weight, I try to cut out all the fats. I didn't weigh that much to begin with, but I didn't want to gain weight. So, and with the onset of the diet, my eyes got very dry. I have to put eye drops in my eyes 4 times a day. And my daughter, who's a nurse practitioner, volunteered the information that maybe I gave up too much fat in my diet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly could be the case. I mean, fat is, you know, we think of fat usually as the culprit. You know, fat has more calories, and we think, well, it's to monitor our weight or cut weight. We think, well, let's cut calories because that's where a lot of the, or cut fat because that's where a lot of the concentrated calories are, and that's certainly true. But we do know that just for body functions, you know, probably not going below 15 or 20% fat in your diet's a really good idea. And that allows you to have the fat to help with things like skin and hair.
How do you get that much fat in your diet, though?
Well,
what has fat in it besides bacon and...
Yeah. Well, things, for example, like oil and vinegar dressing. Oil and vinegar dressing, something like... an olive oil-based salad dressing, which is certainly monounsaturated fat. It's good fat. It's very helpful, and that's pretty concentrated fat. Other things like nuts and seeds, for example, peanuts or almonds or walnuts, throwing those on your salad. You know, if you've cut your fat way down now and you like things like nuts, even...
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Adding 3 or 4 tablespoons of nuts, and there's 10 grams of fat anyway, or more, depending upon how much you use. And so... Those ways you'd be adding essential fat that you need, even things like slicing half an avocado on your sandwich, which avocado is really high in monounsaturated fat, but it's not necessarily fat that's going to raise your cholesterol or any problem. But just adding a little bit of that is a huge help because then your body has the fat it needs for a lot of different body processes. But I will often see people have problems with changes in their skin and tissues and their hair and things like that when they go on an extremely low-fat diet because then you don't have the fat to manufacture a lot of the things that you need.
Could you mention, please, any other things that I could... Now, I never eat 3 or 4 tablespoons of nuts a day,
mm-hmm.
but I guess I ought to.
Well, I think if we look, let's say, at a typical... We'll use the last caller's example or so. Let's say a typical 15 or 1600 calorie diet, even 20% of 1500 calories or so is about 300 calories of fat. And that's not all that much fat, but certainly if you had, again, even if you had a couple tablespoons of nuts and you maybe had 2 tablespoons of even a low fat salad dressing that might have an additional, you know, 8 or 10 grams of fat. And maybe if that's the only thing you did, that would certainly give your body a good amount of fat in terms of getting that started. And I think also things like the more monounsaturated fat margarines and sort of the healthier margarines that maybe have 5 grams of fat, but they don't have the 15 that a tablespoon would have if it were just the straight margarine, is not going to hurt you at all. And yet it's going to give you some essential fatty acids. And even something like granola that may have fat from oil in it that's better for you, a little bit of that would be a good addition because that adds some good nutrition and at the same time adds some fat. So what I would suggest is maybe a tablespoon of nuts here or there, a little bit of olive oil in cooking.
Now, what about milk? Because I've cut way down.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the fat is only in milk that would be fat, 1%, 2% or higher fat milk is going to have fat. Skim doesn't really have any or very little to speak of. So you don't. You certainly still want the protein and calcium if you're cutting down.
Should I get 2% milk would be better for me?
Well, I'd say the priority with adding fat would be more monounsaturated fats. The fat in milk is a saturated fat. It's not as healthy for you. So you're better off having oils, oil-based dressings, nuts, seeds, things like that. And so what you do is you add fat, but you also add protective fat for your body. And so that would be a good way to kind of consider adding the fat as a better source of it as well.
Like canola oil?
Mm-hmm. Canola oil is good. Olive oil is good.
Yeah, that's what I bought the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And I eat walnuts and peanuts.
That's great. That's great. You might just want to, you know, what you could be aware of is maybe you increase calories there, but maybe you cut out starch or grain or something like that. Or, for example, instead of having a whole bagel, you might have half with peanut butter. That'd actually be better for you because you might get the same calories, but now your breakdown is you have a little more fat in that food, and you don't need to eat maybe as much of the grain, but you've increased the calories from your fat and protein.
Thank you so much. What meat has a lot of... See, I don't eat much meat either.
Mm-hmm. How about some salmon or...
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. The fish would
be
great.
Yeah, but salmon is like $12 a pound.
Well,
$9 to $12 a pound.
Even something like salmon, you know, that's less expensive, maybe the salmon that is more the packaged salmon. We really don't have to worry about, mercury in small amounts and things. And even let's say if you're having a salad and you put on that rip-top salmon that you can get now that you maybe have 3 ounces of that on there and a few nuts. And, boy, that'd be a great salad. Wouldn't be that high in calories, but what you get is...
It sounds very good. I think I'll take care. Thank you much. Good program.
You're
bye
very
bye.
Welcome. Good luck with that. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. The numbers to dial if you'd like to talk with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Next, we go to a listener in Urbana on line 2. Hi.
Hi. Recently, I was looking at the orange juice carton, and I saw that it has been pasteurized. Now, I thought that vitamin C is very easily destroyed by heat. What sense do you make of that?
Well, generally, the juices that you're going to find in the store, often they are pasteurized so that they don't have any problem with foodborne illness or bacteria or things like that. The vitamin C that's in the juice, and sometimes there's additional vitamin C added to the juice, should be in a form that it's well utilized. And so I don't think there's any problem, in other words, that you're drinking vitamin C, but you're actually not getting the benefit from the juice because it's not natural. Certainly, I think the juices are formulated so that if some of that is denatured, then perhaps there's additional added to. I'm not sure what they do with the orange juice, but certainly you're going to get the benefit from that vitamin C, but you won't have the problem with the food-related illness or potential problems there.
And I was looking at the frozen concentrate. It looks as if they're not talking about it. They don't even pasteurize at all on that. So the processing, would the processing be different enough that there's no need to pasteurize that?
Well, that must be, again, I'm not sure exactly how that's done in terms of making it shelf stable, but because it's a frozen product again, and you're going to use it when you get it home, that certainly may be, you know, a lot of people feel more comfortable drinking it that way. And some of the studies that have looked at this brings up a good point where they've actually looked at vitamin C content of orange juice in particular. And generally, those frozen type products, if you just make as much as you need, or maybe you just make it for one day and you drink that and you have it in a container where it's not open to air, where it's not oxidized, the vitamin C is not oxidized, generally they maintain a higher amount of available vitamin C just because they're not unscrewed and open to air and stay in your refrigerator for a long time. And so, you know, choosing that frozen form of the orange juice actually might allow you to get more available vitamin C just because it's not open and closed all the time and sitting out on the counter and things like that.
I appreciate your help.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. Also, it's less expensive to buy it in concentrate, isn't it?
It is. It's generally less expensive, yes.
Yeah, but that section of the supermarket, this is really interesting, that section of the supermarket where they have the frozen juices mm-hmm. is shrinking.
It is.
And the back wall with dairy and juice is expanding.
Right. When you look at all the different kinds of juice now, juice is a good example of a product where we have all these different choices and all these kinds and calcium fortified and all the blends, and it is
heart
very
healthy,
different.
Right. Juice for kids.
Right.
Calcium.
Exactly.
Supplemented.
Exactly.
Very interesting. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, registered dietitian Susan Kundrot. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. Another call from Urbana on line one. Hi.
Yes. Good afternoon. Thank you for being here every month. A friend has told me about a supplement that she's using, and I assume I cannot tell you the name of the manufacturer. It's called the Glyco-Nutritional Dietary Supplement. And the premise is that since our food is not grown the way it used to be, that we are not getting all the nutritional things that we should be getting from our food, and that this is just giving us the glucose that we need, the various building blocks that our body uses directly, and that by taking the supplement, she swears she has more energy, and she's beginning to lose weight, and she's beginning to eat less. She doesn't necessarily give up carbs, but she's eating smaller and smaller amounts. And I wonder if I tell you what is in this, if you could tell me that those are useful things to have, or do you have any familiarity with the glyco-nutritional dietary supplement business?
Well, I would say I'll have you tell me what's in there too, but I think there's this trend right now, and it's up for debate. There's no question that in general our food supply is our food supply, or is it not less nutritious overall, and are we not getting the nutrients out of food that is grown in the ground that we used to because the soil is depleted and whatnot. And so I think that's certainly up for debate and has been debated in the past, and I think I see a lot more about that all the time. And I think the other thing that plays into this whole thing of looking at glucose and carbohydrate sources, which seems to be where a lot of these things are being based too, is there's a lot of thought that, well, a lot of the carbohydrate we eat now is really not quality carbohydrate, because a lot of people eat very refined carbohydrates and really are not back to eating more fruits and vegetables and things that we need. So we get our carbohydrate, but whether we get it from really good sources of carbohydrate is questionable too. And I think that's where some of these dietary supplements have come about as well, saying, well, let's get some quality carbohydrate as well as other things in here that may be beneficial. And certainly, I think it goes back to the whole idea that, yes, how are you eating in general? The whole idea of a supplement is it something that you would need based upon how you're eating? And we know generally if we're eating pretty well, we may need some supplements because we can't get everything, but we may not need everything in a supplemental form if we're paying more attention to our diet. So I think we always look back at that and how someone is eating, and which is why I always promote eating more local food and eating food that doesn't have to be transported that far and all those things, because we know generally those are much more nutritious in terms of overall available nutrients, just because they're so much fresher too. And that kind of gets off on another bin. But you can certainly, if you want to let me know what's in there, because
sure.
There are a lot of different ones out there.
Right. The one I recognize the most is aloe vera inner leaf gel powder. It's the gel that comes out of the aloe vera, and that's the one I recognize. And I have read a little bit about the aloe vera gel or aloe vera liquid that comes from the aloe vera plant leaves. And there's been some exploration whether that is good, especially for digestion. And then there's something which I cannot pronounce, which I will spell, hopefully. ARABINOGALACTAN.
Yeah, arabinogalactan, I would say, which is a carbohydrate. Be as far as I could tell, it's a starch.
Mm-hmm.
That would be added to that, too.
And then something, there is a particular starch, and then there's some gum products, and then glucosamine, HCI vegetarian. And, you know, I never realized, you know, when I used to take a glucosamine supplement for arthritis, that glucosamine was a sugar. And then the last one is WAKAME, an algae, an extract from that. And its name, I guess its botanical name, is UNDARIAPINNATIFDA.
Okay.
Is that...
Well,
give you any clues?
I don't know everything about all these compounds that are in here. Certainly aloe vera gel has been used for a long time, and particularly to help with healing, and a lot of people have used it. You know, we think of it maybe for burns, or we think of it for healing or decreasing inflammation. Glucosamine, as you mentioned, is a glucose-based product, which is why if someone takes glucosamine and they are diabetic, or if they have any concerns with blood sugar regulation, that's something that needs to be really monitored by their physician because they're having
and
some...
not diabetic, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then these other, you know, the galactan-type product is generally would be a starch or carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
Gum products are generally other carbohydrate products that may help it stick together, too, depending upon what they are. So, you know, I couldn't say exactly if this really is a miracle supplement like it sounds like from your friend or not. But what I do know is that if someone has starches and particularly fibers, I don't know if it notes how much fiber is in the supplement.
Dietary fiber, 2 pills equals 3%.
Okay, so it wouldn't be real significant amount of fiber in there, maybe 1 gram or so.
Yes, 1 gram.
1 gram. Okay.
And and sodium is 10 micrograms, and total carbohydrate is 1 gram.
Yeah, is 1 gram. So it's got a little fiber in there, and it may have some things in there that decrease inflammation from the looks of it, from what's in there, which may certainly make you feel better if it does definitely increase inflammation in you, in the person in particular. I don't know that... this, particularly 1 gram of carbohydrate, I'd be suspect that that is really going to affect your total carbohydrate intake in other ways. But it's not something I've studied a lot, so I know that these supplements are out there. I think it's an interesting concept. I think, you know, I think it does bring back the idea of where are you getting your carbohydrates? That's a big question. And are we eating carbohydrates that are high quality? And particularly if you're trying to lose weight, the benefit of this whole idea of energy density, that the carbohydrates you're taking in, you're getting more of those carbohydrates that are low energy density, and meaning that you eat a lot of them, but they don't have a lot of calories versus eating a...
Now, I eat lots of fruits and vegetables, especially fruits. I think fruits are wonderful. And I hate to give up bread. And while I did not take these for losing weight, I took them because my friend said... she felt so much better, so much more energetic, and she got operated on her knee for various things, but not for replacement. And she said she healed amazingly well, and even her doctor was amazed at how well she healed. And I thought, well, I'll give it a try. You know, it doesn't sound particularly dangerous. And then, lo and behold, much to my amazement, I began losing weight and mentioned that to her, and she said, yeah, she did too. And I wondered, could that weight loss be purely water?
Well, if it's significant, it's probably not purely water. If you lose 2 or 3 or 4 pounds, it could be related to fluid. It could be this, it could be something else you're doing, but certainly if you've lost more weight than that, it's probably real weight loss, whether it's related to the supplement or something else. You know,
and
I
that
do...
is hungry. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want to nibble as much, and I seem to want to eat a little bit many times a day instead of, you know, three big meals.
Right. One thing I would recommend, you can actually input the exact name of the supplement.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a website, if you get on the web, that's a really great tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I use a lot myself in my practice. And you can actually implement the name of the supplement in the tool on the website Natural Database. And that's just www.naturaldatabase.
And that's all one word?
That's all one word.
Naturaldatabase.com.
And this would be a good place for this particular supplement because it's reviewed. The supplements are all reviewed by pharmacists.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's any information on there, of course, what's in the supplement, it'll come up, and then it'll come up if there are any potential interactions mm-hmm. with any of these compounds that are in mm-hmm. the supplement or something. For example, it'll probably pop up there that, yes, this does have carbohydrate, it does have glucosamine, so if you're diabetic, this would be something you'd want to discuss with your physician.
Right.
And that's a big help, too, because there might be some other potential benefits mm-hmm. on there that we haven't talked about that would be listed as well.
So it's www.naturaldatabase, and it's all one word, naturaldatabase.com.
Right, exactly.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate this information.
Well, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is our guest this afternoon. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions for Susan. Give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455 333-WILL 800-222-WILL. No one waiting at the moment. Well, what's the recommendation for getting carbs from fruit and vegetables? What kind of, can you kind of give us a simple bare bones kind of look at how much fruit,
mm-hmm.
how many vegetables we should be eating on a daily basis?
Well, I think a good general guideline for most of us is at least 2 cups of each a day. And that kind of goes along with the recommendations that we have for our national guidelines and looking at amounts that you would eat. Most people don't eat that much. But it's really not that hard to do if you do think about it. And so I think, I mean, even if you have a pear, let's say you have a banana and a pear, and you have a salad, that might be a cup of salad, and you have sliced tomatoes, that could easily be a cup or something in your day. And really, when you think of it, that's not that much. And so some of the studies from the National Cancer Institute or American Institute for Cancer Research have looked at more like 8 to 10 servings a day, which actually is more maybe 5, 6, 7 cups a day if you look at your total amount of what you would take in, and that of being even more protective. And so I think the thing we do know that we just have to really, really remember and focus on with all this information about carbohydrate and these kinds of things that are out there is just, in general, more produce is protective. And so if we look at long-term studies on cardiovascular health and cancer risk reduction and some of these key studies that have looked at prevention of disease, generally people who eat more fruits and vegetables are less apt to get disease. But obviously a lot of healthy people get sick.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly to reduce our risk, we know that that's more beneficial. And then I get the question that comes next to me, of course, is a lot, well, if I'm going to eat that much produce, should it be organic or should I start worrying about the pesticides and other things? And that's where I think, you know, 2 things that I think you can do. And one is definitely, you know, we have this wonderful farmers market in Urbana, and many places we have great farmers markets now is trying to get local produce when you can, or finding out if you have local produce available at your grocery, or even places, shopping places where the produce goes fast. So, you know, they're bringing in fresh produce more often and you're just buying produce that looks more fresh. I think that's really helpful. And then if you can buy organic and you feel more comfortable with that, sometimes it's more expensive, so you have to take that into account. I think it certainly outweighs the organic issue if you just eat more produce, because we know that's helpful in washing things very well, and even putting some lemon juice in your sink. If you had a clean sink with lemon juice and water and washing your fruits, as many of them as you can, right when you bring them home, that can be stable to get some of the chemicals off, is a good thing to do too. So we do know that that's probably the most important thing you can do. Most people, when they eat more produce, they probably are going to eat fewer breads and other things, that sweets maybe, that would be higher mm-hmm. in calories. And so most people, a secondary effect may be weight loss if they need to lose weight. And so I'd kind of mention this idea of energy density, you know, trying to eat more foods that are really lower in calorie for the amount of food you eat. And the book, and we might have mentioned this before, Volumetrics, which is just a really fantastic book that's out now by a professor at Penn State, Barbara Rolls. And in a lot of her studies, they've done some of these similar studies at Illinois here too, where they really look at the amount people eat based upon what the food looks like or if they're paying attention. Or she's done a lot of work with changing the energy density. You have a salad that's 2 cups of salad, but it's pretty high-calorie salad, high-calorie dressing. And you change that to maybe a low-fat dressing, but you put in more salad and you eat a lot more food and you get more satisfied, but the calories are the same. And so the idea of adding produce, of course, more fruits and vegetables, is really helpful because that's a way to eat more but have fewer calories, get satisfied, eating healthier, all those things. And that's really helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, bread, often people sort of put it in a corner and say, bad guy.
Yeah.
But depends on the bread.
Right. Depends on the bread and the amount.
Right.
That's the other thing. But like you say, if you have a whole grain bread, which is really what a lot of the focus has been the last year in looking at even the new pyramid, what's a whole grain versus a grain? And now all these breads out there that sort of look like white breads, but really they do have more fiber, really are better for you. And just trying to get more natural grain breads. And we have so many choices for those now that we never used to. And being aware, I always tell my clients a slice of bread is really a slice of bread. So if you have a bread, maybe you get a big loaf of bread that's a homemade bread or something, or, you know, a huge slice probably is 4 slices. So you have to make it look like a regular mm-hmm. slice of bread. And so that's where portion control really comes in. But there's nothing innately wrong with bread or pasta or rice or anything. It's really the amount that you have and then balancing it with these other foods.
Yeah. A number of sandwich shops now are offering folks the option of having half a sandwich,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, half a sandwich and salad.
It's perfect, right? It's a perfect mix. I think that brings up the point. I think our second caller who had the question about fat and had cut her fat way down, and that's common, you know, that's common to do that when you're thinking you're trying to cut calories, but I think the whole idea then is just balance. If you get back into balance and nothing's cut too low, then we know we're in good shape. It's the same as protein. When people cut their meat out because they have high cholesterol and all of a sudden they don't have much protein in their diet, their energy's low, and maybe they're noticing they're not as strong or things because they don't have as much protein. So you certainly don't want to be too drastic with any change you make in your diet.
Yeah. Well, you know, the caller who called about the fat question, it's very interesting because last time you were on, we talked about eye health.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we talked about was good fats.
Right.
Good fats are important for eye health. So too protein.
Mm-hmm.
And so too the things that we... Of course, carrots always comes to mind
when you think
about eye health, but fruits and vegetables, protein, good fat, all in balance. And one other thing we left on the table last time you were here, the importance of exercise.
Exactly.
That came to me as a surprise, that you can actually walking on a regular basis, daily, 30, 40 minutes, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
you can lower intraocular pressure somewhat.
Well, and if you think about, you know, we say there's all these benefits to exercise. Exercise is kind of in that camp as fruits and vegetables. You can't really go too wrong there unless you're overdoing it. But exercise, too, when you think that often if you have concerns with your eyes, sometimes they're related to blood pressure. We know if you've got higher blood pressure, that can affect cataracts maybe or other things with your eyes. So if you're maintaining your blood pressure, and great way to do that is moderate exercise that can really help with that, then certainly it makes sense that that might have an effect, and probably other things that are going on with exercise and eye health too. I think we'll hear a lot more and see a lot more about, you know, how to maintain healthy eyes, because as more of us age and perhaps live longer and more people live longer, and we're seeing such a huge increase in the diagnosis of macular degeneration and other eye related diseases that we know may be preventable, or at least partially preventable, by even simple things. Like if you look around, sometimes I'll look around at a game outside and notice how many people are not wearing sunglasses. And that's a big issue, because we know that you need to have protection on your eyes when it's sunny out. And I found it real interesting, my 4-year-old now at school, I mean, most of those kids, when they're outside for long periods of time, there, a lot of them have sunglasses that they're wearing. And I think that's really good because we're more aware where we probably weren't not that many years ago.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Susan Kundrot is our guest this afternoon. We've got 8-9 minutes left in this portion of the program. So if you've got a question about diet, nutrition, exercise, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Susan is with Nutrition on the Move, and she joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. And we've got a couple of listeners dialing in now, so I'm going to stretch just a little bit longer so we don't keep people waiting. And our next caller is going to be on line one, a listener in Urbana. Hi. Listener in Urbana, line one.
I'm on.
There you are. We got you.
All right, I'm from Champaign.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm wondering if there is any recommendation for improving sleep for one who is taking prednisone daily, 7.5 milligrams. I've had lots of problems for 10 years sleeping as a result of prednisone and perhaps other medicines. So I just wonder if what, besides warm milk, and is really beneficial and will produce better sleep.
Well, I think, you know, what you mentioned, the warm milk or just relaxing at night, which I'm sure you've probably tried a lot of things for that, I think is certainly helpful. I think from a food standpoint, we do know that many people don't tend to sleep as well right away, at least early in their sleep. If they've eaten within a couple hours of going to sleep, for some people that does make it so they don't sleep as well. For others, it makes no difference. But if that's something that does affect you, then moving up, let's say, your bedtime snack or making sure that you're giving yourself an hour or two before you sleep where you don't eat much, that maybe your body then is not trying to break that down and digest that, it might be easier for you too. I think from a I've had a lot of clients who've seen success with the supplement melatonin. That might be something you've tried before or you've talked with your physician about. But melatonin levels do decrease as we get older, and they help. Certainly melatonin does help with sleep. And so there have been some studies that have been real positive that melatonin in supplemental form for some people, if their melatonin levels are low, that may help them be able to sleep better too. So as far as all the supplements that are out there, that would be one probably worth looking into.
Do you have any recommendation as to how many milligrams?
Yeah, let me see. I might actually have that here. I don't have it on the tip of my tongue. But I can see if I can find that.
Let me just reintroduce Susan. Let me tell you a bit about her. Susan is a nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move, and she specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for folks. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she writes frequently for magazines on health and fitness, and she is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Susan Kundrot joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. You'll find Susan on the web at www.eatandmove.com, EATNMOVE.com. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Give you enough time?
Yeah, I'm all set. Thank
okay.
you very much.
You're
That's
very
teamwork.
Welcome.
Yeah, I'm looking at, I brought a book that I have, a supplement book that does review a lot of the research studies on particular supplements that have a good amount of research on them. Melatonin is one that does. And if you look at dosage amounts, most of the studies have been 0.1 milligrams to 2,000 milligrams. And if you look at the amounts, are that's a huge range, of course.
I
and so
see.
Most of the supplement range is from 3 to 5 milligrams. And so that's typically what you'll see in a supplement amount. Trying to see what I find on safety. There's just tons of studies that have been done on this supplement. And so we know it has been well studied. Not every study has found benefit, but many have. And there's no, and I'm reading here too, that in terms of safety, they haven't seen any major harmful effects of melatonin in those amounts. And I think like a lot of supplements, if you take a whole lot of it, then there certainly could be problems. But it seems to be this 3 to 5 milligram is pretty typical in a lot of these studies of what's been used too. So that would be something. And again, I would certainly recommend you talk to your physician about it. Make sure sometimes these supplements will have, there might be an interaction with another medication you're on, or if they don't know about it, perhaps your pharmacist could, or I do that for a lot of people too, is really review their supplements and medications and find out if we think there would be potential interaction with that too. But at least that's one that has been pretty well studied, and the safety appears to be pretty good as well.
I see. Are there any vitamins that you would not recommend taking in the evening that might affect sleep?
I don't really think, as far as I can think of, that there would be anything that would be a problem. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the only thing with vitamins is sometimes if you take a lot at one time, again, they may sit in your stomach for a while and take a while to be digested again. That might give some people some heartburn or some problems with that too. So you may be better off taking more of those in the morning, or mostly in the morning as well. But I think the other thing to keep in mind, and I don't know if this affects you, but particularly when you're on prednisone or something where you're retaining fluid and your fluid balance may be off some, as well as to try to stop your liquids a couple hours before you go to bed, because sometimes people don't sleep well just because they're having to get up and go to the bathroom a lot during the night too, and that can be helpful.
Okay, I want to thank the listener for her call. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more caller this afternoon. A listener in Chicago, line 4, hi.
Thank you. I just to point out something on when to take the vitamins and minerals. I heard long ago that someone said, well, maybe the vitamins should be in the daytime and the minerals in the nighttime, but then others have said they should be taken together because they're all complementary and so forth. I wonder if you could ever check that out, the difference between daytime assimilation or nighttime. But follow through on the matter of protein that people are so concerned about. Other things. In the Orient, I think the longest longevity factors in the human race can be attributed to the people in Okinawa, where they only eat protein or meat as a side dish, and they complement the rest of the food they eat with large, large amounts of vegetables and grains, you know. So that's a good recommendation. But the final point about protein, you know, when we think of all the animals that are out there that we eat as sources of protein, they get their protein from the earth. And so they're not out, unless they're carnivorous, eating out of animals. But the point I'm making is the breakdown of protein from the plant food is so much more easier to assimilate and digest and to convert to amino acids. And many people just think, well, protein will get a hamburger, get a steak, get whatever you want, and that's protein. But it takes such a long time to break that protein down to the point where it's an amino acid form to be assimilated. So I thought I'd pass through those observations along. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And I guess we can add here, my suspicion would be is that we eat more animal protein than we do, like, say, tofu protein,
right,
or that
right.
kind of thing. And we've talked about what a serving of protein is in terms of meat. And it is, when you think about it, a serving is a small portion.
Right.
And the rest of the plate should contain more.
Exactly.
Should be the bulk of the meal.
Right. I mean, a good rule of thumb is to think that maybe your meat or protein is, you know, we always say a deck of cards is 3 ounces. And for most of us, unless we're very muscular, and of course if we're training for something we're going to need more protein, but typically to stay healthy that may be the amount we need. And if you have a glass of milk or soy milk, if you prefer that, then you have some more protein. You're going to get protein, as the caller mentioned, in vegetables and in grains. And so I always say, well, if you look at your plate and whatever your grain or bread or pasta or rice is, double that with your vegetables on the plate, and then try to keep your amount of meat or protein to a reasonable amount. And then at the same time, make sure there is some fruit or maybe an additional salad. And if you eat like that when you have the opportunity, you're going to have plenty of food, but you will get a lot of variety and certainly more vegetables. And that's really kind of the whole focus of what we really want to shoot for overall health.
Okay, very good. Well, that's where we'll leave it. We're out of time.
Okay.
Susan, thank you very much. We'll see you in July.
Sounds great.
How
Thanks
about
for
that,
having me.
July? Susan Kundrat has been our guest in this portion of the afternoon magazine. She's a registered dietitian. She joins us on the first Monday of the month.